Nothing in this program should be considered investment advice. It is for educational purposes only. Please hit pause and read this disclaimer in full.
The United States of America has joined every other country in the world in repatriating its gold. To what ends, we're not sure.
The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special edition of Finance University, where we explain all things financial to you. Something huge is breaking. That's the hypothesis. We have data, and we're going to talk about it. The canary in the coal mine, in this case, is a golden canary. It is gold itself, also silver. I think they're sending us a signal. Now, listen, I'm just one guy. I have some observations, but I have been watching the gold market and have been an investor in it closely since gold was under 300 an ounce and silver was under 450. So I've been at this a long time. I have never seen what we're currently seeing. So how do we interpret this? We're bringing in a big expert on this. We're going to be talking gold and silver, and today we're going to be talking with VBL's ghost, if you follow him over there, Soren Tech on Twitter. But this is Vince Lancey, commodities portfolio manager, adjunct professor at UConn, can talk about all kinds of things related to finance, corporate finance, but in particular, the gold markets, follows it even more closely than I have. Vince, welcome to the program. I'm really glad to have you because I think something's happening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris. And we've been mutuals for a long time, so I'm very happy. And I'm actually, you know, I'm a little bit honored to be on this. So let's get to it. What do you want to talk about?
I want to start here. So this is February 4th, 3rd. We're starting to get these things out of Bloomberg. I call this the retail story, Vince. They're telling us, gold rose to all-time new highs after President Donald Trump's 10% tariffs on China prompted some retaliation from Beijing, buoying haven demand. I don't think this is due to tariffs. Don't explain this to me, but that's from my point of view. What do you think?
Well, the answer is no, they don't. In a word, tariffs do not explain the price of gold going up in one area and not in another. Now, I know that was held out to be the reason in the beginning, and for good reason. If you're without going down too many rabbit holes, if there's too much gold on the COMEX that's stamped with, let's say, Mexico or Canada, and you have to make delivery of that, well, then you might get slapped with a tariff. And that story became a reason to swap out your gold or swap out your silver. But it's persisted and it's increased, even though the likelihood of tariffs has not. So there are two things going on here. And empirically, if anything, tariffs are a catalyst that end up serving as a cover for something bigger going on. Now, I don't know that it's going to be a Lehman moment. It almost never is in metals. But I do know that the important players in the market, and by that I mean the LBMA and the bullion banks, they're not happy if the price of gold goes up. And that sounds obvious, right? But what I mean is they'll do everything they can to short circuit impulsive demand. So the gold market, they don't care if the market, I mean, I'm simplifying. If gold goes to $5,000, they don't care. They just don't want it to happen in 2 days. And so they'll slow it down. And things like lease rates, which we're going to talk about, right, are EFPs. Those are safety valves that the public doesn't see. And so as long as they can move higher without the gold price moving higher, you're kind of letting off steam at the problem. However, the gold price is moving higher, and the math says that it should be a lot higher from here. But the short version of the answer is tariffs are not a reason for the price of gold to go up in the world. They may have been a reason to bring gold to the U.S., in a little bit of a flurry, but they are not a reason for gold to stay high now. No, they're not. They're not.
Well, so let me explore this theory. So again, like I've been watching this for a very long time, and I'm watching like 2008, 1:30 in the morning, silver was 12, suddenly it's $8 an ounce, right?
Right.
And because somebody decided to step in and just crush the bid stack, they just dumped paper futures in, as many as needed. And it's kind of like, you know, my model for that, Vince, is it's kind of like, this is the overnight markets, right? So it's kind of like Hawaii decided to crush the price of cattle, and Oklahoma wakes up to find out all its cattle are worth less, right? That should have just bounced. That should have been a little moment in a tiny market. It should have bounced back, but it didn't. It stuck. I used it as a huge buying opportunity because I love 50% off sales, right? That's all awesome. But I've seen that over and over again. This feels a little different to me because of, I've never seen anything like this. So this is gold and COMEX vaults. I'll get my little lasery pointer thing. So Zero Hedge saying, in the past 2 months, 500 tons of gold, 40,000 good delivery bars. Those are the big heavy ones. Quietly delivered to the 9 COMEX vaults, mostly JPM, Brinks, HBSC, HSBC. The total COMEX gold under Manhattan and Delaware now, 1,040 tons, an entire Switzerland of gold. But look, this is normal. This is normal to me. Normal. Inventories go up and down. And then right here, right after Trump is elected, we start seeing this. But this is explosive. That doesn't, that I don't have, I've been watching this, like I said, more than 20 years. I've never seen that before. So it's new.
I haven't seen a slope like that as well. Okay, there's a lot of ways to go here, but the Trump post Trump winning the election. All right, so let me just focus on your picture here. The gold leaving Europe coming to the U.S. is not because of a tariff. It's going into GLD. It's going into SLV. The Bloomberg headlines are like the opposite of sensational. They are, and I'm not even wearing a tinfoil hat here. I'm just talking about the economics of how the market works. The Bloomberg headlines are effectively gaslighting people. Bank of England gold is at a discount. And so the rest of the world is stupid for buying it. That's one of the things that will come out of those headlines. But going to the actual metal being delivered, look, tariffs are, just starting with tariffs and working towards what I think is going on. Well, what I do think is going on to start up front is that the United States of America has joined every other country in the world in repatriating its gold. To what ends, we're not sure. Could it be for a monetization of gold using a bond type of product? Yes. Could it be an anticipation of someone else using gold as a monetary unit like the BRICS? And so we want to get our gold out of there to make it not available for them? Yes. Could it be for literally for making coins? That's what happened in 2020. Yes, you have to buy COMEX gold. So you end up pulling it from Europe so you can make blanks to make these things. Mm-hmm. Yes. Could it be we're going on a gold standard? Highly unlikely, but sure, you can count that. So with Judy Shelton out there talking about these things, and you have all this gold coming back, I think the tariffs are a cover. I think really what's going on is it really comes down to what happened post-COVID. Every country in the world, the ones that we've seen, the ones that tell us, are mostly Eastern Europe and the BRICS. They have been buying or repatriating gold, right? So China has been buying gold hand over fist. In some months, 10 times more than they announced publicly. So they'll buy 5 tons, you know, out of London, right? And then they'll buy 50 more tons OTC as Goldman has started sharing with us. Then you have India repatriating its gold from England, right? This started 2017. It started 2013.
Germany, right?
Yeah. Right, you got it. Germany said we want our gold back, and we said we need 6 years.
It takes time. There's planes, security. It's very hard.
Exactly.
We don't have a dolly lift. I don't know. It was very complicated.
it's amazing. You know, the thing that we're going to, that concept that you're describing there, it's all about throttling to slow down momentum. So if you don't have it, You can't say you're out of stock because it ruins your franchise. You say, they're in the back room, let me check. You know, and that's where the dolly comes in, the joke that you made there. But in 2013, they said, we want our gold back. 2016, we got it to them, and we bragged about how we got it to them 3 years early. No, it was 3 years late. The gold was there, right? It had to be reformulated. It had all these other reasons. So Germany starts the ball rolling. Everyone freaks out, and then they don't care about it anymore. And then China starts buying. 2013, 2012, after the great financial crisis. And it works its way in that India starts buying, and it happens with silver in 2022, and you start seeing backwardation silver spreads, which I'm very familiar with and like to trade those. And China is buying 10 times more than they're saying, but they're saying it. So the Eastern European countries, Poland, for example, buying a ton of it. Everyone's announcing that they're buying gold except the United States and the rest of the G7. And we can't do that, because to do that would be to show that we're concerned about the strength of our own money. It's like gold is a competitor with the dollar.
Gold is a anti-dollar.
Right. Exactly. So to say, you know, we're going to buy some gold too, is to say the dollar is worthless. It is, you know, if it's not backed by gold. So now you fast forward, and the most recent was China restarted buying. They never really stopped, but they restarted buying publicly in October. And India is buying, and Eastern Europe is buying. And now all of a sudden, COMEX goes bid, right? And COMEX goes bid, everyone says tariffs. And I said, no, that's not it. It's repatriation. Who is the buyer? Well, as Zero Hedge said, it's going to JP Morgan. It's going to GLD Vaults. So there are all kinds of little stories that I have in my head that I'm trying to, you wait for information. You know, it's conditional probability. So for example, one of them, I'll share a couple with you because they're in line with what you're saying. One of them, we have a lot of gold over there in Europe, and that gold is constantly loaned out, because all the gold in the world is available at a price. And so it gets loaned out, rehypothecated, and double dipped on. And so you want to make sure that you have your gold back so it's unencumbered. So we start taking it back. GLD becomes hard to short. So you can't short it. You can't take the gold out. JP Morgan starts bringing gold back from Europe. The LBMA as a pricing mechanism weakens. It's almost like the big picture is Europe is the milkshake. You know, the whole Daniel Day-Lewis, there will be blood. The milkshake is being drunk by two straws, the one going out to China, which stops in Switzerland, you know, and then goes to China. And then the one that we just put in, pulling in here. Now, can it go back to Europe? Yeah, it can, but it's not this time, because everyone else wants their gold, so we may as well get ours.
Hello, everyone. I just wanted to take a quick break to tell you about Peak Financial Investing. Look, my whole goal in life is to help you be prepared, to help you be resilient, to have you have the freedom you need in order to live your life in the way you want to live it. And top of that list is financial freedom, making sure that the money you have saved accumulates appropriately and isn't lost to some random process of market downturn or something like that. Peak Financial Investing is a place where we will connect you with our endorsed financial advisors who understand the world the way we do. You deserve to talk to somebody who is not going to look at you like a dog listening to white noise when you say, hey, should I invest in gold? Hey, you know, is the dollar going to be okay? Hey, are there any big risks here? Are there any bubbles we need to be aware of at this time? Great questions. So when you ask those, you deserve to speak with somebody who's got good answers, thoughtful answers, and knows, most importantly, how they're going to respond nimbly as the world around them changes. Now, this is one of the periods of the most extraordinary changes we're going to see in market structure. China's coming up and rising. Geopolitical tensions are afoot. We have all sorts of realignments happening. The federal government is deficit spending like nobody's business. You know, the Federal Reserve wants to get back to printing like crazy. We understand that gold is popping to all-time new highs. The story has changed. Your investment philosophy needs to be nimble and responsive to that. So at Peak Financial Investing, we'll connect you with people who see the world that way, who understand how to run what's called a risk-managed portfolio to account for all the changes that are coming. Because If the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm, our oath is first take no punishing irrecoverable losses. It's time to manage risk, it's time to understand how the world has changed, and it's time to make sure your portfolio of savings and wealth are there for you and can meet your needs all the way through your retirement. Now, back to our program.
The thing that gets me is watching and reading both what's said and what's not said. There's sins and lies of commission and omission, right? So this I wanted to get your take on for sure, because make it make sense, right? Today's headline, gold dealers sell Bank of England bullion at discount. So I don't understand how gold dealers can sell Bank of England bullion, because it sounds like it's theirs, but they did. And the story is they're like, oh, gold in the Bank of England vaults trading at a discount to the wider market. Now it's going to take 8 weeks to get it. Because they're so backed up, but they're selling gold in the Bank of England vault at a discount of more than $5 an ounce below spot, which shouldn't happen, like 20, 30 cents. So the story is gold, Vince, it's in real short supply. Deliveries are delayed, but, the price is lower than you. Make this make sense. How do we?
Okay.
Come on.
Yeah. I read that. Okay. All right. So I just wrote 1,000 words on this very topic. Okay. So yep. Let me start generally speaking. First of all, the headline is not the story. That's not a surprise. The headline is not the story. The headline also implies that gold is trading $5 cheaper in the place that gold should trade, and it's trading higher elsewhere because all the idiots are buying it. The real story in that story is the chart that has the lease rates. So, and you have that chart. I know you have that chart. Zero Hedge also put it up. That's a Bloomberg chart posted by Zero Hedge and rehosted by you. And what it reflects is, and this is the story in that Bloomberg story, okay? So the whole story is gold is in demand. They can't get it out of England, which in and of itself is not necessarily true. They can't get it out of England fast enough. Supply chains are clogged. There's not enough available gold in the gold float. And the headline is, well, gold's trading cheaper at the Bank of England. Well, that's complete horseshit, excuse my French. What that is, a reasonable person, which sometimes we are, is, well, then why is it trading cheaper? Well, here's the key word. It's not trading. It's sitting there. It's not going anywhere. So I have a product. I'm the Bank of England. Let's say for whatever reason, I don't want the price of gold to go up. Let's just say that hypothetically, right? We know why you would say that, but let's just say that. And I am viewed as the standard in the world. Well, if there's too many people coming in to buy it, I basically do what they did in the stock market. I say, stop trading. And so that's what's going on here. It's no different than when an exchange says stop trading, liquidation only. It's you know when a stock is halted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're halting the stock. They're halting. So it's not trading $5 cheaper. It's not trading at all. So the analogy is very clear. In everything in the world that trades on an exchange, if it's going up too fast and someone gets hurt, that's very important to us. We turn it off, let people cool down, which has merit in and of itself, but we let people cool down and we hopefully find some gold so that we can sell it at the lower price. Or we can buy our shorts back.
Yeah.
This is what a short squeeze is. A short squeeze is, everybody wants to buy, nobody wants to sell, you can't get your shorts back. So you stop trading. But that chart, the lease chart, is the key to this. See, the lease goes from arguably zero to 5%. So what is the lease? And I can divulge a little bit of why this mechanics works without, you know, boring people too much, but it's like when you can't borrow a stock to short it. I short a stock, right? And then I have to borrow it to short it. Well, you have to, at some point, cover the short. And what happens when you cover the short is you cover it because either it becomes too hard to borrow, right? Or because you've made money, or because it's gone up. Now, we take that concept and we bring it to gold, which is where it started. And I am a speculator who has no interest, who does not have the gold for delivery. I don't have it. Some do, some don't. And I short the contract, and the market goes up. And it comes to expiration, let's say on COMEX, and the person says, you know what? The long, who's usually the weaker hand in the relationship, the small hand, says, I think I want the gold. I want the gold now. And I say, as a short, I don't have it. I have to borrow it, like borrowing a short for a share. And that's where the lease rate starts to go up. Well, where's the gold? Well, it's over in London. Let me borrow it. Gold in London to lease, it's all over the place. You can get anywhere you want. It's 10 basis points. And then it's 50 basis points.
Let me follow this. So you're saying... Yeah. I've sold you some gold I don't have. And suddenly next Tuesday, you're like, Chris, where's my bar? And I'm like, I'll be right back. And I have to go find a bar.
Right.
And somebody's willing to lease me that bar.
Absolutely.
And I can pay that. And the idea is that I pay a lease rate and then some point in the future, I give them a real bar back. But if it turns out we have a real shortage of bars out there and everybody's trying to do the same thing, you get a chart that looks like this. Did I get that right?
Yes, you got it right. In fact, that's the, if the EFP was the early canary in the gold mine, then this is like a flock of canaries. So to put a point on it, before I put the tinfoil hat on, gold leasing is a normal, necessary part of the business. Everyone knows that all the gold everyone in the world is gettable at a price. It's not consumed, it's not eaten, it's not destroyed by some bug. All right? So, and silver somewhere in the middle. And so what happens is I'm a jeweler and I need to buy gold, and a refiner says, I have the processed gold for you, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe there's a strike to get the gold to him. Maybe it's back in the days of South Africa. And the guy at the smelter, at the refiner in Switzerland says, the delivery is 5 days late. And so what does the refiner do? He finds someone who has gold in a vault. And he says, I'm going to borrow your gold, I'm going to pay you interest on it, and I'm going to use that gold to give to the jeweler so he can make his jewelry, right? So I get charged a lease rate. The jeweler in the normal business says, hey, I want the gold. And the smelter who's short to him says, well, I don't have it. Give me a second. Let me borrow it from someone. And so he borrows it from all the rich people in the world that have their gold there, and the central banks, and the BIS acting as agent for central banks. And he pays 10 cents or something like that. But he literally will take the gold and give it to the jeweler so he can use it. Now, he's got a 30-day contract with whoever he borrowed the gold from. Hey, I want my gold back there in 30 days. Right? So he pays the interest, 10 basis points, 20 basis points, annualized, it's like 1%. Mm-hmm. And in 30 days, he puts the gold back. Now, if he's an aggressive, evil speculator, he just keeps shorting the market and he keeps borrowing for delivery, betting that at some point the deliveries won't keep up. For every 10 contracts, I'm a bullion bank. If I know that for every 10 contracts that I sell, only one's going to want delivery, I'm going to short 10. And that one guy who wants delivery, I'm going to go borrow it. I don't need the gold. I'll borrow it from a Rothschild who's got gold in a vault over there. So that's the normal operation. It's actually necessary. It's part of the business. And here's where it gets strange, or this is what's happening. I'm this short-sighted seller, and it's no longer a jeweler. You know, 1 out of 10 contracts, it's 9 out of 10 contracts. The guy says, hey, I actually want the gold this time. What do you mean? You don't usually do that. It's statistical playing, running into a change, a sea change. And the sea change is somebody in the U.S. wants the gold. It's J.P. Morgan. It's Bank of America. China wants it, and they're pulling it out of the U.S., so U.S. needs to replenish it. It's just all going into China. It's all like, it's like out of London into China, out of London into the U.S., out of the U.S. into China. But now it's staying in the U.S. So now you've got this guy who says, this is where the lease rates come in. The price hasn't gone up at all yet. I don't have to go in and cover my shorts in the futures to make delivery. I'll just borrow it from someone. Well, it's no longer 10 basis points. It's 1%. It's 2%. It's 5%, as the chart shows. Now, how does it get to 5%? In the good old-fashioned way, it gets to 5% because there's not enough gold available for lease. And what are the reasons that caused there to not be enough gold available to lease? Well, the first one is there just isn't enough. The second one is, and this is why the whole throttling and headline at Bloomberg is, frankly, a load of horseshit. If the gold is there, then it would trade. It would come out of the vault. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want to make $5 more on their gold? Do you want to lose money? Right? That's the point. If gold's not destroyed, you do that. So now you have this 5% lease, and you say, well, where's it coming from? Well, it's coming from, it's a combination of things. China wants their gold. There's less of a gold float. And then here's an academic thing that's very important. Basel III is going to get implemented in the U.S. in July. This could be our answer.
Tier one asset.
Right. In July of 2025, Basel III, which essentially reestablishes gold as a tier one asset in Europe. It's a European rule, right? But it ends up becoming the global rule. If it's tier one asset, then you can, if you have it in your presence, you can actually, let's say this is worth $2,900. I can get $2,900 for it from the Fed window. But we don't do that yet. But in July of this year, we're supposedly supposed to be implementing that. So you want to get your gold back before then, because you can now get it out of Europe and get it cash from the Fed window. So that's a reason to repatriate your gold. All right? So no one's really talking about that. There's only one other person out there who's mentioned it, who reminded me of it, and that's Eric Young. King Kong on X. But he and I were talking about it when it first started 18 months prior. And he's like, you know what? They're going to be implementing that in the U.S. I'm like, well, shit, I want to have my gold back in the U.S. for them. So there's no gold available for lease, right? China is buying all the gold that is available for lease, and the rate goes to 5%. What should happen now is the price of gold should go up. What's 5% of $2,800? It's 5% for 1 month. So I have a choice now. I'm short the gold. I can either spend 5% for the lease with no guarantee that the gold will come down in price, or I can go in and cover the gold. As people lose their faith in the LBMA's and the Bank of England's strength in keeping a lid on the price, it's trading $5 lower. As the collective faith of that industry in Europe is tested, they will say, 5% for 30 days, that's $140 I'm paying. How much higher is gold? $5? Fuck it, buy it. So it's like, I'm going to cover my short rather than pay the lease rate. And as the lease rate goes up, another thing will happen, and you would definitely appreciate this, I think. As the lease rate goes up, you can't go to the lessor and you can't say, you know what, I don't want to borrow for 30 days. I want to borrow for 1 year. And the guy says, we don't want to do that. We want our gold back. You've got 10 days left. Where's our gold? It's like, well, how much to release it? Well, that's 10%. Now, mind you, the industry suffers greatly. The jeweler can't get his gold, but they're all, in one way or another, leaning on this free leasing gold forever. And the result is, if the pull-in keeps coming to the U.S., if, for example, J.P. Morgan is pulling all of its leasable gold out of Europe, and I'm a European with gold there at the Bank of England, shit, I'm not going to let any of my gold leave the vault until the dust settles. And so we have a repatriation. I'm sorry, I've been speaking too much. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris.
Well, I have so many thoughts come up because, all right, so here's a model I have in my head, right? And it's based on this. Again, sins of omission, commission. When I find something I can't find out, I get more curious, not less. So right now, I could probably Google up like easier to find plans for how to make a do-it-yourself nuclear bomb than I could to find out how much gold exists where.
That's right.
Keep trying. I scour bank reports. Finland has leased its gold, but to whom? Under what terms? You know, I don't know, right? And so my view of this has always been that, you know, this should be simple. Here's a guy probably in the 50s. There's bars on a number.
That's a good title. I'm sorry. That's a good title.
Yeah. Back when people could still count that. Now they're like, it's so hard. How would we? Oh, we'd have to conduct an assay. And we don't know. It'd be so hard to figure out what is in Fort Knox. But to me, it should be pretty simple, right? If I go to GLD, they ought to have a spreadsheet with rows and columns with bar numbers on it. And those would be their assets. And you would know they're their assets because they have a number and their name on it, and it's held in a fully allocated account that has custodial title. I get the sense what you're saying is this is one big sort of fungible market that's been run, kind of like the bank back in from It's a Wonderful Life, right? Fractional reserve lending of gold, under the theory that everybody wouldn't want it all back at once. And it kind of feels like we're everybody kind of, for whatever reason, we can talk reasons next, wants their gold back all at once.
That's exactly what's happening. I mean, let me ask you, I mean, let's pretend that you and I are running the Bank of England or the LBMA. How could we not see this coming? We are in the hub. Like, how do we not prepare for this? Like, why are we not? Well, that's because this obfuscation and this lack and this opacity are a feature, not a bug. And they all think they're going to be bailed out by someone else. It's musical chairs for gold now. They're all golden chairs. And it's like, I've got mine. And you're waiting for the weak hand to be knocked out. But it's rather pathetic that an association that's supposed to be protecting the industry, whether it be the jeweler, the refiner, smelter, end user, investor, is not ready for this, given with what happened during COVID. A very similar thing happened during COVID, given what happened, as you described, in 2011, hard to borrow. How could they not be prepared for it? And that's because it's a feature, not a bug, that we don't know where the bars are. Because they have there's three shorts on every one contract. That's it.
Where it is. I think at least part of the scramble is you know, what we're seeing is around that. And so to your point, though, this was astonishing to me. Rob Kainz reporting here on Feb 3rd that so we had 22,538 contracts delivered in January. I don't watch it as closely as he does, but I've been watching it enough to know that normally you have a couple of heavy delivery days at the beginning of the month and tails out, right? And then maybe a little burst at the end. This was just sustained, just day after day after day, 1,000 contracts, 800, 1,200, 2,000 contracts. Just give me my gold. But then first 3 days in February, 40,000 contracts. That's, and you got to put two zeros on that because a contract is for 100 ounces, right? So 4 right. million ounces.
I know. That's unheard of. It's unheard of. When the London gold pool scheme failed, we created futures. And the idea was the physical would stay in London and the COMEX, which also was a physical exchange, would suck all the liquidity for financials. And most people won't take delivery. And so, as I said, 10 contracts are shorted. Maybe one takes delivery. Now, the nuance, but even more interesting thing to me is, not only is the volume amazingly too high for delivery, it's coming in a contract month that, generally speaking, doesn't have high volumes to begin with. So, for example, the deliverable months, every month is more or less deliverable now, but the most important deliverable month in COMEX for silver and gold overlapping is December. The February contract is the dregs. You follow? And silver, it would be the March contract. So December is the only, if you look at the board, if you're a futures person, you'll notice that every month in the COMEX alternates. So February is liquid in gold, March is liquid in silver, April is, they alternate because they don't want to have any delivery problems. But December, they both have a December contract, and that's supposed to be end of the year, clean house, everybody gets and everybody makes delivery. But here we are in 2025, and they're doing in February. And they've already kicked this out for a long time. Even as I speak with you about this topic, I'm growing in being convinced that the JP Morgans of the world know that they can use their gold as a tier one asset going forward. Basel III will be implemented. They need to have their gold back unencumbered. And that's, you know, I'm giving it more than a, when this conversation started, I'd say it was a 5% chance. Now I'm giving it like a 25% chance. I think that's what's happening. Why else would you take delivery of the gold? That, you know, we, it's it. I don't know what else to say. It's just, it's happening. It's happening.
Well, these are elephant moves, right? These aren't like a bunch of people showed up and said, I want a bar and put the threw the bar into the back of their car and drove off, right? This is right. Something entirely different.
No, it is entirely different. So, yeah, to elaborate on that, these are institutions. So using silver, which is something that I'm more familiar with, the physicality of it. If you were to say, I want to take delivery of 3 million ounces of, if you were to say, I'm going to take delivery of 10 million ounces of silver, you can only move like 3 million a day physically. So gold's easier to move than silver. But the point is, these are, the word you use is elephant. These are massive elephant purchases. And where is the gold going? Well, where is the gold going? Is it going to the Fed? Is it going to the Treasury to make coins? Is it going to a GLD vault? Because we're going to, GLD is going to become our COMEX. It's going to become like where they store the metal, I think. Is wherever it's going, it's coming to the U.S. And that's the contradiction with the tariff thing. If tariffs are a risk, then everyone should be buying gold before it gets tariffed in other countries. Instead, we're buying the gold. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're going to be tariffing? You know, well, you know, why is gold going up in New York? It should be going up in other countries in anticipation of the New York tart price. Anyway, yeah, so these are monster purchases.
Let's do this with very quick with because I like silver. Silver's a big bug. What is this? What am I looking at here?
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I started trading metals in silver, so I'm a silver person before gold person. Silver is the most interesting commodity on earth. And what are we looking at here? What is that? 8%, 9%?
Yeah, let's call it 8% right now. Silver forwards trading in backwardation. Please explain that to everybody, myself included. What does this mean?
Futures markets or forward markets, they're pretty much the same thing, except one is over the counter and one is public. They trade in either backwardation or contango. When a market is trading in contango, the front month is lower than the deferred month. So let's say there's only 2 months in the world. There's the 30-day month and there's the one-year month. And the one-year trades higher than the 30-day because they're the same exact metal, and the difference in price between now and 30-day, a year from now, is based on how much you have to cost to store it, how much you borrow, your insurance. So basically, it's opportunity cost being factored into the price. So the price of silver is $32. The price of silver, if I were to take delivery of it a year out, is $32 plus the interest rate times $32, yada, yada, yada. And so you have this cost of money put into it. Also known as cost of carry, right?
For whatever reason, they call that contango, but it means it's cheaper today than at some point in the future because there's a carrying cost to get to the future.
Yes, yes.
That's contango. Yeah. Okay,
no, that's
great.
Contango. Backwardation is I can't be delayed in getting my metal a year from now. I won't buy it now and wait for delivery a year from now. I need it today. You see these more commonly in commodities that are used. You should never, ever, I say it, but it's going to happen. You should never see this in gold, and you should almost never see this in silver because your silver and my silver are the same silver. So this silver and that silver, I'll wait a year for it, and I'll just get the money in interest. You'll just do the hedge in the futures. But when people start wanting their silver tomorrow, and they say, I can't wait for it a year from now, then you get this backwardation. Right? Where the spot silver is needed tomorrow. And the 1 year out silver, we don't need. Now, why do you need silver tomorrow? It doesn't rust. You can get it back. Well, the answer is they do need it tomorrow. And the answer is silver has many industrial applications. And the bottom line is, and this is where I got my first schooling in future spreads. The bottom line is silver, unlike gold, can literally be squeezed. Now, if you like, I can tell you the story about how Warren Buffett squeezed the silver market.
Yeah, with this 130 million ounces, I think it was, or whatever it was. Yeah, I love stories. What do you got?
It'll take 2 minutes, but it will spell this backwardation contango stuff out. So silver's trading in the 90s, when you were trading it, silver's trading $4.50. And everyone, think about the bullion banks, but this time it was the miners. Everyone's saying, oh, nobody wants silver. I'll just hedge it, and then I'll borrow it to make delivery. No one's going to want delivery. And then one day Warren Buffett says, I want the silver. Give it to me. And the market went, what? And he started saying these contracts coming off that were expiring. He goes, I'll take delivery. I'll take delivery, right? So it was such a massive amount and it was all at once that the market freaked out. Silver in, I actually sold the high on the trading floor that day through a broker. It was 747. So silver rallies $3 in one day and then stops. It just stops. Nobody could trade it anymore, which is like, it's trading lower in London. Why isn't it trading that price everywhere? Because you're not trading in London, because you stopped the market. But back to the Buffett story, here's the backwardation story. I think you'll love this part. So silver's trading $4.50, right? Buffett says, I think I want delivery. You know, I think I want all of it tomorrow, now, give it to me. And the market goes, oh shit. The miners go, well, can't we borrow it from someone to make delivery against our, because we don't even have it anymore. And Bill Gates, friends with Warren Buffett, Paul Tudor Jones, friends with Warren Buffett, they had already bought a lot of silver physically in the vaults. And they said, oh, you can't borrow our silver. It's not here. You know, it's unleasable. They made it hard to borrow like a stock. And so at this point, and this is all true, at this point, the exchange or CFTC or someone in authority goes to Buffett and says, listen, if you force these guys to give you the silver, you're going to break the whole industry. We don't want that. Is there anything else we could do? I'm making up the conversation, but this is what happened. He goes, well, I'll tell you what. I'll delay delivery of the silver by a year. What interest rate will you give me on it? And that's a lease rate. So that lease rate that you have up there, almost 9%, is that for 30 days, that lease rate?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So
1 month lease rate.
Right. So Warren says, let's pretend that we're looking into, we're both Warren Buffett, and we say, okay, I'll give them, I'll let them delay delivery by 30 days, and I'll charge them 9%. And the miners and everyone else who's short says, we're not going to have it in 30 days. We need a whole year. And so Buffett says, well, I want, but this is a big cost back then. Buffett says, I want it to be this. And so it ended up, he ended up earning a 40% rate of return in one day. Mind you, he was leveraged, so it was really a 400% rate of return.
Wow.
So what happened was, and this is where the backwardation comes in, the lease rate, which you just showed, goes to 40% for 1 year. So instead of a 1 month for 9%, it's 40% for 1 year. And what happens is the price of silver at the front month goes up by 40% relative to the 1 year. And so the spread between 1 month and 1 year differentiated by 40%. The backwardation reflected the lease rates, which is what's supposed to happen. So if lease rates continue to do what, who was that? Who gave you that chart there?
This one? Well, it says Source TD Securities, but I got it from Improved Metals, Hugo, that guy.
Oh, yeah, he's good, yeah. Right, and Rob Kynes, I'm not sure how to say his name. Yeah, like, look.
Source is Daigle Gali at TD.
So, yeah, exactly. Daigle's one of the guys telling the truth. If you're reading Daniel Gali, he's one of the guys telling the truth. They're in the process of a stockout in gold. They're in the process of having a stockout risk in silver. And stockout means the silver and gold may be around, but it's just not available. So you don't have any, you're out of stock with it. But back to the backwardation contango thing to wrap that up. This 9% rate that you're showing here, if it persists, it becomes a chronic problem. And if it becomes a chronic problem, and again, if people lose faith, if people all wake up one day and say the emperor is truly naked, then you have the whole futures curve in the COMEX go backwardated, which is in the process of happening now. So that's it. We're having a genuine, we're at the beginning. We're in the anteroom of a genuine short squeeze in silver. We're in the anteroom of gold prices creeping up very quietly to 3,500.
I love silver. I really do. And it's this idea that from James Lavish. And so in 2024, like they're like the total deficit. This is for the CBO. Sorry, I had a silver one for silver from the same guy. But you basically, year after year after year of actual supply deficits, right? And at the time, I remember I put the chart together. It's the Silver Institute. I'm not sure how much I trust them, but whatever. But the point was that the price of silver was exactly the same as it was at that point I put the chart together 10 years prior, right? And it had a structural deficit of hundreds and hundreds of millions of ounces in like 5 out of 6 years in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's I did a post on that about 4 months ago. But here's the facts are, fundamentally speaking, the facts are, as you said, there's not enough silver being pulled out of the ground by miners to cover the increasing demand, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, there's not enough silver being officially recovered in scrap to, recycled to cover the demand. So number three, and this is the simple facts of it. Therefore, the shortfall has to be covered by depleting above ground available supplies. Hence, the vaults get drawn down. So everyone's going into their piggy bank, their silver piggy bank, to cover it. Now, the amazing thing is, as you noted, for 10 years, the price is unchanged. Now, we don't have to be rocket scientists to know that if there's a shortfall in silver, then not only is it vulnerable for a short squeeze, but you can't just go around finding the silver. You have to find it. It's heat bleach. It's not like paper. You can't just pick it up and say, oh, here's the silver. You have to find it. You have to get it there. It's hard to transfer. So what is it that, in addition, why, I'm trying to put this genteelly, what is it that keeps the price of silver unchanged for 10 years with this kind of a deficit and a growing, mind you, and also growing inelastic demand? Solar panels. Silver used to be, you know, investor season. Now it's solar panels. Okay, but staying on point, what is it, if all the silver that's being used to cover the shortfall is from above ground supply, and the above ground supply is clearly being drained, like an SPR, like any reserve account, when a reserve account gets drained, the price starts to go up. Well, silver never goes up. Why? Because silver is not a central bank asset, because central banks don't buy it. And so while there may be 5 contracts against each bar of gold out there short, there are 1,500 contracts, I'm exaggerating, obviously, against every short silver. And the reason for that is, let's say there's silver demand is, although it's in, because it's industrial, it has a cyclicality to it. And because it has a cyclicality to it, you can eventually get it back. It's also a byproduct of heat bleaching and nickel and zinc and all these other metals. And so, to answer your question more directly, right now, this is what's happening right now. Right now, started in China in 2021, 22. China directed, China the government, so basically it's like their country, directed all their zinc and nickel miners. They pull zinc and nickel out, and they have these piles of leftovers, and in it is silver, and they let it sit there for years until they get enough to sell. And so China ordered all their miners and refiners to process that silver and give it to them. So does that hit the COMEX price? No. So now China goes into Latin America next. This happened as well. And says there's something called silver concentrate. And silver concentrate basically is bags of earth. And there is like 10% silver in it, but you have to pull it out. And it's from mining something else. China says, we're not going to buy silver on the exchange anymore. We have the manufacturing. They go to Latin America and they say, we're going to buy your concentrate for you. Now, this is a big deal. They had been doing it for years, but they ramped it up substantially. So that's less raw silver that can be found. So what we had relied on for the last 10 years, you cannot rely on for the next 10 years. The concentrate silver that we could just go into Latin America and say, okay, we'll take your scrap. Right? China's buying it. America can't get its hand on Latin American silver. There's just less overhang out there, and there's less emergency supply to tap into. And so the next 10 years will not be like the last 10 years.
I love this history. I'm so glad to be talking to you because I've had all these dangly thoughts. And one of them was last February, not this February, a year ago, I open up the paper and it's this little article and it says, oh, you know, India's silver imports really like through the roof. 2,600 tons from the UAE. Vince, I'd never even had the UAE on my battle map of players in the silver market, and all of a sudden, they're importing 10% of world mine output from UAE. What happened there?
All right, so I'm gonna make you very excited. I think based on my studies of the BRICS, I'm not an expert, but I know more than most laymen. Based on my studies of what the BRICS are doing, they have been searching for an asset to use to replace bonds and the dollar, right? So a collateral that's unencumbered, that's neutral, and they settled on gold. They were searching for years. They were like, let's use oil, let's use pistachios. You can't use those things. You got to use something that is agreed upon and not consumed. And so they're using gold. And then 2022, India imports a ton of silver. And UAE does. You're like, what the hell is UAE doing with silver? They're not making solar panels. They're not making UAE silver eagles. What are they doing with it? Well, I'm pretty sure that it won't just be gold in the BRICS basket. They're not going to be trading gold. You're going to be using your assets as collateral. So if I'm a Mexican country, let's say I'm Mexico, right? And I'm a part of the BRICS. Or let's just stay with any country. Any country that wants to use its assets as collateral to grow its economy, but not sell it, well, India is buying silver. Russia just announced they're going to be buying silver for their central bank.
A strategic stockpile, they said, right?
That's right. Now, but you can... The straight up story is you're buying silver because it's industrial for it's a strategic metal for your stockpile, which, by the way, why don't we call it a strategic metal? Well, there's a reason for that, because it would be completely unobtainable if we did that. We don't have our own. We don't make it anymore, so we can't call it strategic. We have to say, oh, we don't care about silver. It's all gaslighting. Yep. But in Russia, they're like, it's strategic. It's used militarily. It's used economically. And it doesn't get destroyed. So you're going to have countries like India, I believe. There's no proof of this yet. But based on the path that the BRICS are going, if I'm a country with silver, I'm going to be able to use silver as part of my collateral moving forward. Now, there's no news on this yet. But why the hell else would UAE be buying so much silver unless they intended on, you know, starting a silver solar panel company? So, yeah, like to India, you know, when India bought that silver, that was as the Fed was raising rates in 22. Remember, they were raising rates. And during that time that India bought, I watched it closely. The EFP, the spot market in London, went over the futures market in the U.S. by dollars. So as all the Americans were saying, sold, I think it's going down, India was going buy it in London. So the price went backwardated. So if that happens again, we're going to have a big problem. Look, silver is when there's no more gold left to buy as an investment asset, silver becomes unobtainable. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I'm a little more silver than gold. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm a fundamental analyst, and apologies to anybody who can't read all these numbers, but we're looking at 10 years of silver supply and demand, again, from the Silver Institute. And all you have to do is go down to that part I circled in red at the bottom. Everything that's in yellow shows a year where there was a structural shortfall. Those are in millions, hundreds of millions. Those are millions of ounces. So you see a number like minus 300.5. That's minus 300 million ounces that had to come from somewhere. This is just unrelenting. It's just negative, 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 negative. So we're just eating into stockpiles. And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Russia and the whole strategic thing, because in researching that, I discovered that one of the most important uses right now is the silver zinc battery, the highest, most highly dense battery you can get on a per kilogram basis. Right. And guess what those are used for? Well, drones and stuff that you need in warfare. So it's a very strategic needed metal. And I feel like my country, if we have a strategic stockpile, man, we've kept it well under wraps.
That's right. Well, we had, you know, I'm not sure many people know this. You probably know this, but the atomic bomb was made using silver. You know, you think your audience would be interested in hearing that? I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's super interesting, because it was the war, right? And they needed a big old magnet, and I guess they didn't have enough copper or something, right?
That's right. Well, the thing is, they were scared that if they used the copper, it would deplete the military and people would see oh, we don't have enough copper for shells, you know, going into their equipment. So they said, we have a ton of silver. Let's use that. And they used it. Now, 20 years later, they allegedly don't have it anymore. Meanwhile, other countries are now acquiring it. So I think we're doing it as well. Yeah, silver is just too important. Gold is money, but silver is more.
So that chart I showed where you see the lease rates for silver explode to 8%, the price has done nothing. It's like wobbling around 30, 32, 33, 31.
It's a complete disconnect. And, you know, the disconnect, if it were a normal, if it were a normally functioning, healthy market, when the lease rate goes up, let's pick a stock. When the lease rate on a stock goes up, meaning you can't borrow it to short it, the price goes up, not the same day, but the price is sure to follow, and sometimes very explosively. An example of that would be the meme stocks. You couldn't borrow your shares. You have to borrow to short, and so the price went up, so you ended up covering your shorts. Nobody covers their shorts in silver. They just roll their shorts. They kick it down the road over and over again. So for lease rates to go up and for price not to follow soon thereafter in any way, shape, or form that's comparable says to me that there is a process behind the scenes to make sure that price doesn't go up and let that price be taken out in leases. You know what I mean? Like, we'll pay you more in a lease. Just don't go buying it on the free market, that type of thing. So that's it. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So let me run one more idea. So I have several hypotheses about what we're seeing. Here's one. Somebody, a big bank in Europe, maybe, I don't know, a giant financial institution, somebody got in trouble, right? And when trust goes away, we learn they're stirring Lehman Brothers. Everything's fine. We have basically a faith-based monetary system and financial system. It's good as long as I think you're good and you think he's good and he thinks she's good and I think she can pay me, right? This whole thing. But as soon as you're worried that you don't know who's holding the bag, man, that everybody retracts their tentacles and they freeze up, right? So what if we were seeing something like that? And here's my hypothesis. Janet Yellen, a monetary vandal as chairman of the Federal Reserve, now a fiscal vandal as Treasury Secretary. So this is how they've been funding the Treasury market for a long time. $2.5 trillion of reverse repos able to be tapped. And those are almost gone, right? There, you can see, had almost gone. So who's going to buy the Treasuries? And Janet, in her infinite wisdom, left Scott Bessent with, and this comes from Samantha LeDuc, is who I got this from here, $9.5 trillion of refinancings. So, it's just got to be rolled, which means we have to have a functioning liquidity system out there to do this. What if gold is telling us that there are people who are concerned that this is a story that has the chance of not going very well?
It's you know, that's the story that came to the forefront when SVB collapsed, right? The deficit spending became a big deal. And to answer your question, it hasn't been front page news for the last couple of months, but it's still there. And that is, we have a deficit. It's unsustainable. Yellen wanted to keep it in the short dated. Well, that's another whole conversation. But you spoke about trust, okay? Trust is breaking everywhere, right? So you described the corporate breakdown of trust. I don't trust you as a counterparty. I don't want to take Lehman's paper. I'm Goldman Sachs. I don't want to do business with Lehman because they might go under. Well, that's what's happening in the world right now. So post-COVID, you saw it in England when they had the mini budget trouble. You see it now in England. Deficit spending is no longer a tenable monetary policy. Spend now and recoup it later with growth, because the growth isn't there. That's a neo-Keynesian concept, and it came about right after Carter. It came about during Reagan, and that was basically, all right, well, we'll just keep borrowing, and we'll kick it down the road with all these innovations. Well, there aren't really any innovations, well, that can help us be more productive without making everyone unemployed. But to bring it back to the point, China doesn't trust the U.S. This all starts, by the way, with Russia, okay? Russia invades, it's real simple. This is a geopolitical version of your Lehman example. Russia invades Ukraine. We sanction Russia. We then confiscate their reserves. We confiscate their wealth. What was their wealth in? Dollars. What was their wealth in? Treasuries. All right, so now I'm every other country in the world, and I say, well, I don't want to own as many dollars anymore. So Yellen, who now needs to finance more dollar deficits, comes along and goes to China, tries to get everyone to buy dollars, so we don't trust you guys anymore. The trust is broken. Well, what do you trust? I trust something that has no counterparty risk, and that would be gold. And so that's what's happening. The deficit issue is not over by a long shot. I think Trump has a chance of lessening it, but it'll be back on the front page in about 6 months. I think it's a big, big deal. It's not a small deal because we can't get enough people to buy our bonds anymore. China's not buying them, right? No one's buying them. We have to finance our own deficits. And that means you and I have to buy government bonds. And we don't want to unless we get a higher rate. So the government's going to have to do something to make it easier for us to do it. Maybe government home equity loans that are really cheap. I don't know. But I have ideas. But in the end, either we spend less to reduce the deficit financing, which means standard of livings drop, or we find another borrower, a lender, to give us the money. We colonize Mars because hopefully there's someone there that will lend us the money to finance our deficit. Or the third one, and the third one is, well, the second one is, I believe that, again, another conversation, but I believe that they're trying to find another buyer of our bonds. China won't buy it. Japan can't buy anymore. London can't buy anymore. Who's going to buy it? Well, what if we let everyone put their U.S. bonds into Tether and buy Bitcoin with it? I think there's an aspect of Bitcoin, especially with Howard Lutnick involved, there's an aspect of Bitcoin that makes it a liquidity sponge. So if you can use your treasuries as collateral to buy Bitcoin, then it makes Bitcoin a good tool for taking our deficit and making it into an asset. So, but that's not out there. Luke Roman has mentioned it. A couple other people mentioned it. But that's basically it. I'm sorry. You were saying?
So you mentioned something very important. Silicon Valley Bank. That's this spike, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
So this was people getting more and more and more worried about the banking system, even before it got announced. It's sort of in March here. This line is right when it sort of broke into public awareness. But the gold market caught on to this in mid-January, right? And started figuring this out. That's why I just suspect the gold market has figured something else out, only it scares it a lot more than SVB did back in March of 22.
Well, just having the conversation with you, using that chart as the example, if what happened on the left happened during SVB, then what could there be going on to justify what's happening on the right? And so I have been saying, well, it's gold and silver specific. And I might be wrong. And by that, I mean, they want the gold. They want to hit. Well, why do they want the gold? This is the reasons for what's happening now. And the reasons for what's happening now are not a bank. Okay. Right. It's not SVB. It's not a bunch of banks. It's the world. The world no longer lends and borrows to each other anymore. Right. The world has become very mercantile. It's cash and carry. There is no forwards. There's no futures. There's no growth between us. There is a financial iron curtain. It's not my phrase, but it's a good one. Financial iron curtain going up. And the only way that I'll be able to buy your stuff in China is if I have gold to transact it with. They don't want dollars. So if you're putting that chart
up again, it's a global Lehman moment. It's a global Lehman moment. Yeah, GFC was banks not trusting each other. Now we're talking gold is saying countries don't trust each other, which of course,
right?
Yeah,
it's a lot bigger. So here's the question. Here's my question to you. I think China and the U.S. know this, and they have to be working together. Otherwise, how could, with those type of lease rates, how could the market not have a much bigger problem than it does? Why are we? What is being hidden? And I'm not even saying this paranoid. What is being hidden, or more importantly to me, is is what are they doing behind the scenes that only the lease rates are showing? It's like the there's a little ripple on the water, but the water underneath is just loaded with sharks and crocodiles. I don't know. But it is bigger than Lehman. It's definitely bigger than Lehman. And it's bigger than Lehman in an international, global, governmental way. That's what I think.
Okay. So thank you. That's really helpful. So that confirms. I mean, that's what I've been thinking. But, you know, when I see moves that dramatic and then I see headlines that banal that don't even begin to connect the dots, I know there's I'm not getting the wholesale story. I'm getting the retail story. So I know that there's something else going on. It may blow over. I've been at this long enough. I'm not that excited because, you know, these things somehow they patch it over. But Vince, if I was going to say, what would a comics default mad scramble for hypothecated bars that don't exist look like? Kind of looks like the charts we just looked at to me.
Yeah. It does. It does. And right, I could just see right now, everybody who knows a miner is trying to buy their metal directly from them now. There's just miners are going to be asked to go into overproduction. If I was like Canada, I would just nationalize my mines. You know, that's how Canada works. But to your point about the actual steepness of it, if this doesn't resolve in 60 days with much higher gold and silver or much lower lease rates, then I will completely just say the fix is in. And just quit, you know. It has to happen.
You know, bull markets climb a wall of worry, but this is a big worry, and you know, and we're not in a bull market right now, even though gold is approaching 2,900 as we speak, because I've been at this a long time. I have a very big contact list. I got a lot of followers, and nobody's Bitcoin laser eyed emailing me with like, you know, this idea that like we're, you know, nobody's slam dunking. It's quiet. This is the quietest all-time new high in gold. And I've been through a bunch of them, right? I don't feel that greed fear cycle. Like people are disbelieving, which means I think we're at an earlier, not a later stage of this whole thing.
It's
sentiment wise.
Right. You know, you remember Y2K when gold did what it did in 2000, 1999. Yeah. It was like, you know, options volatility went from 5% to 100%. And I was actually on the floor for that. And I was on the floor for silver in 97 and 94. But your comment, I think, is a very important point. And I think it's how governments operate. Meaning, if you believe, like I do, and I think you do, that the part of the press's function with regards to many things, but especially precious metals, is to tamp down or counter enthusiasm. Yeah, exactly, right? And provide, be a propaganda tool to keep things orderly, to keep the plebs or peasants in line. And when you look at that Bloomberg article, the headline is gold's cheaper, not the headline of the lease rates, which is lease rates are at infinity. Like that should be the headline. The headline should be lease rates are at infinity. What the F is going on now? Now, when you take that with all the evidence that we're looking at and the wall of worry and the fact that no one's talking about it, I think that the government and the legacy media's ability to work together has gotten so good over two generations. It's not like 2 days that you have people going, gold, what's that? Right? Neo-Keynesians. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about gold. I'll buy tips. I'm not worried about gold. You know, I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll buy Bitcoin. And I think that's what they've wanted. And it's now a crowded trade. The press can't turn around and pivot and say, gold's great. Right? Because then they're playing into Trump. Then they're playing into inflation. Then they're playing into all the boogeymen. And so the government, anyone who's involved in the bullion market, as Greenspan, like, I'm not making this up. Greenspan said this. Greenspan said the most important factor in keeping the perception of inflation down or under control is the price of gold. And the thing that Volcker said when he left office was, my one regret is I wish I had taken control of the gold price sooner. Mm. And Greenspan said, I'll take care of that for you. So the gold price sends a signal. And government, in the end, this is your wall of worry coming. And this is where I ascribe to. I don't think they care about the price anymore. They can't control it. It's bigger than them, meaning it's China. They care about the speed at which it attains the price. And so I think we could have a 10-year wall of worry. And so one day, everyone goes, oh, the gold's trading $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. What should we do? Maybe I should buy some. And then all of a sudden, maybe you shouldn't, which is why we should probably be buying miners now. Because that's what they're going to do. They're going to be told, gold, no, that's rallying too much. But buy this miner for the dividend. You missed like a 10-year bull market. And now, you're, I mean, miners probably are a buy now. But that's my point is, the longer it stays out, it is classic wall of worry. Don't buy it if they start talking about it in a nice way. So, yeah.
We're at the end of our time here. So we've been talking with Vince Lancy, and we've been talking about all things gold. And you would know him potentially over on us at Sorin the K over here on Twitter, or X as we call it now. And you see VBLGoldFix.com. And you can see a lot of people sort of follow you that I follow. So great stuff. I think people need to have their eyes fully glued on this. I think, obviously, not financial advice, but everybody needs to have some hard assets and an exposure to gold and silver.
Oh, yeah.
Pick the percentage that makes sense to you. But if you don't have any, listen, I you know, good luck is all I will say to people at this stage. Because
that's right.
A dollar now, to riff off something you said, gold isn't worth $2,988. I mean, $888 right now. A dollar is worth 1/2,833 of an ounce.
That's right. That's the greatest trick they ever did to us by telling us, what is it, James Grant, who said, we price gold in dollars when we should be pricing dollars in gold.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. So, Vince, hey, thank you so much for your time. I hope we can continue this conversation because we actually just scratched the surface. A couple of rabbit holes opened up that we didn't go down, and I really wish we could. So I hope to have you back soon.
Thanks, Chris. And I'm very happy to have finally, now that I know that you are a long-standing silver bug, we can talk about 1994 off the air if you have time. Yep. Did you know Soros tried to corner silver?
Did not know that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off the air. You can
all
have
right.
Bag and I'll share it. But yeah, that's a good
cliffhanger.
Story.
Okay, next time. I can't wait to hear that story.
Exactly. All right, well, exactly.
Hey, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yes,
thanks.